Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Georgia may have an advantage over Oklahoma in an area in which, well, it's about as important as it gets when it comes to a college football. Let me explain it to you here. Good to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily. Thought that ESPN.com had a really great college football playoff preview. It's like one of these big, you know, you click a lot of graphics, a lot of things like that, looking at both the Georgia-Oklahoma game and the Clemson-Alabama game. And one stat in particular that ESPN pointed to, which really kind of got my attention, was the imbalance in favor of Georgia compared to Oklahoma when it comes to recruiting. Now, I'm assuming ESPN's using its own recruiting numbers here, so if you're more of a Rivals person or 24/7 sports person, the overall numbers, you're going to be a little different. But ESPN lets us know that over the last 4 years, these two teams will play in the Rose Bowl. Georgia has just simply brought in more elite talent than Oklahoma has. The average final class rank for Georgia over the last four recruiting classes is 6.75. For Oklahoma, the average recruiting class of the last 4 years is 14.75. So Georgia over the last 4 years, solidly in the top 10. Oklahoma barely cracking the top 15. For an idea of how specifically the comparison works out, according to ESPN, Georgia has on its current roster 52 former four-star prospects. For Oklahoma, that number just 39. For Georgia, there are 7 five-star players in the roster compared to just one for Oklahoma. And I know that's a lot of stats, a lot to digest on that subject here off the top of the show, but the overall bottom line of what ESPN gives you is, from a high school football recruiting standpoint, Georgia is far more talented than Oklahoma, far more what you call blue-chip prospects, those 4 and 5-star guys. Dogs just have a lot more of those. And I'm a big believer that's a big advantage for Georgia in this Rose Bowl game. Now, there are going to be some people who push back on that notion and say, yeah, but what about Baker Mayfield? Mayfield's not a 4 or 5-star guy. He's Oklahoma's best player. He's the best player, I guess, in all of college football based on the fact that he won the Heisman Trophy. And not only is he not a 4 or 5-star guy, he's actually a 2-time walk-on. Walked on at Oklahoma, walked on at another school before that. This is a walk-on player. So doesn't that kind of poke some holes in the notion of Georgia has an advantage because it has more 4 and 5-star guys? Not necessarily, and here's where the situation gets kind of interesting, because I don't want to overwhelm you with a lot of stats, but there is a meaning behind this, and I think there's an important takeaway for Georgia fans as you move towards the Rose Bowl, how Georgia could be able to use its talent advantage to its advantage on the field against Oklahoma. Because what Bud Elliott from SB Nation, longtime college football writer there for that side, has let us know is having the more 4 and 5-star prospects has been crucial when it comes to winning national championships. Let me read to you a little bit here from what Elliott wrote as a part of the SB Nation season preview here back in the summer. Elliott says, I have a pretty good idea who's going to win the national championship this season. The list of true contenders is short. It boils down to teams that sign more 4 and 5-star recruits than the 2 and 3 stars over the previous 4 recruiting classes. That's an exclusive club, usually consisting of just the top 10% of the FBS programs. But Elliott goes on to write, of all the national championships over the last decade plus, they've all accomplished that. So understand this. If you want to go back for more than a decade in college football and look for distinguishing characteristics of national championship teams, a majority of 4 and 5-star players over the course of the last 4 years is a crucial aspect of who wins national champions. There may not be any other piece of criteria that unites the national champions more than that singular idea. No team in the last decade plus, which is sort of a significant time frame, because that's kind of the online era of recruiting when the 4 and 5-star guys have been truly measured, truly evaluated. It's sort of it's as far back as we can go with reliable data in terms of who was a 4 and 5-star prospect coming out of high school. And during that time frame, no team has ever won the national championship that didn't have a majority of 4 and 5-star players signed over the course of the last 4 recruiting classes. So let me say this succinctly another way. Oklahoma is good enough to beat Georgia, maybe, and good enough to win the national championship, possibly. But if it does so, it'll be the first team in the modern era of college football to win a national championship without a majority of 4 and 5-star players signed and recruiting over the course of the last 4 years. So the work that Georgia's been doing on signing day gives, I believe, Georgia an advantage over Oklahoma in the Rose Bowl. And in a game where the odds are close in a game where the margin may be thin, an advantage like this may be all you need for victory. To go back to Bud Elliott here just for a moment to give you an idea of just how well Georgia has done in its recruiting classes, both the two that Kirby Smart have brought in, the two before that under Mark Richt. If you go back to 2014, what Elliott wrote at SB Nation back in the summer was, is that Georgia's overall roster was made up of just 51% four- and five-star players. But by the time the 2017 cycle was done, Georgia had raised that ratio up to 63%, improving by 12 percentage points the percentage of four- and five-star players on its roster. So the bottom line for me on this entire discussion is this. When it comes to things like this do truly matter. Having the more four- and five-star prospects has helped win national championships for at least the last decade plus. And when Georgia goes into the game against Oklahoma, it's going to have more of those kinds of guys than the Sooners are going to have. Now, the Sooners have done a good job in getting a lot of success from a former walk-on like Baker Mayfield. But it's still good to have the more overall talent. Georgia does have that. It's a big reason why I think that Georgia's in a great position to win that game when it's actually played on January 1st. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. It's good to have you with us, whether you're watching us on Facebook Live at 10 a.m., listening to us on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, or checking us out in podcast form. The cool thing about the podcast is you can listen anywhere in the world, any time of the day or night. We try to make it easy for you to find, whether it's the worldfamousdognation.com, iTunes, SoundCloud, what have you. We just try to put Dog Nation Daily out there, and we're glad that you have found it. Hope you can make plans, by the way, to join us this upcoming Tuesday. We're going to be at the Marlowe's Emery Point. That's in the Atlanta area for our Countdown to Signing Day event. And this is going to be a lot of fun. You know, if you were with us this past Tuesday, just a couple days ago, at the Marlowe's in Roswell, we had Dominic Blaylock, the 2019 UGA committed wide receiver, nation's number two wide receiver, as a special guest. Who's the special guest going to be this upcoming week? Well, you'll have to be there to find out, but it's going to be a great recruiting conversation with Jeff Sintel and me as we really kind of put the final preview on the early signing period, which begins the next day on December the 20th. We'll look back on what is a crowded weekend for Georgia when it comes to official visitors and a big race for Georgia to be maybe at least the nation's number two class, if not an outside shot at number one overall. We'll talk about all of that on our Countdown to Signing Day event, Marlowe's Emery Point. Let me put the address back on the screen one more time, if you don't mind, so I can read the address for the people who are listening to the show. It's 1520 Avenue Place, Atlanta, Georgia. That's 1520 Avenue Place, Atlanta, Georgia, this upcoming Tuesday from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Marlowe's Emery Point. We'll look forward to having you there. We're going to have Seth Emerson here on Dog Nation Daily in just a moment. We'll get into, unfortunately, the story of Latavius Breeny a little more with Seth. Some of the details still lingering on that. We'll also talk a lot about Georgia's Rose Bowl preparations as it gets ready to get back on the practice field and get ready to start thinking about how it takes down the Oklahoma Sooners here on January the 1st in Pasadena, California. Before we do any of that, though, and quick warning here if you don't mind, I know I just gave you a lot of stats here off the top of the show, and I don't want to just cram too many stats into the show here over the course of the next few minutes. Your head's going to be spinning. You're going to think this is like a math class. That's not what I intend to do. But I think as we get closer into the game against Oklahoma, there are some interesting things that have to be discussed and pointed out, like we just said a moment ago. The fact that Georgia does have a talent advantage based on the only way we know how to measure talent, four- and five-star players, I think that matters. And in terms of what Georgia's going to need to do against Oklahoma to ultimately win this game, there are also some stats that can be unearthed in that discussion that I think kind of also matter here a little bit as well. And as a way for setting us up for this, I want to go back to yesterday's program for a moment, because I thought that Mike Johnson, my partner on AT&T SEC Country Live, had a really interesting statement to make. I asked him very near the end of our interview, what's more important here for Georgia? How many points it scores against Oklahoma, or how many points it sort of holds Oklahoma to? In other words, we've heard that the Sooners are going to score 30. Is this about sort of reducing the point total for the Sooners, or for Georgia achieving a total offensively, which gives it a chance to win? And I thought that Mike had a pretty interesting answer to that. Here is Mike Johnson from yesterday, and it sets us up for a really, I think, pretty compelling conversation with the Oklahoma defense. Mike first, then I'll tell you what it all means.
I actually think it's how many points Georgia can score, because I think that Oklahoma is going to score their points. I don't think there's any doubt about that. You know, everybody's going to point to the 30-point threshold. I think Oklahoma's been held underneath 30 points twice in the last 2 years. And I think one of them was by Texas this year of all teams. And so they're going to get their points. And obviously Georgia's not a Big 12 defense, not something that Oklahoma's used to seeing. But when you talk about a team that's scoring 60 per week on good defenses, 30 points seems like it's holding them down. And so I think when you look at Georgia's offense, it's not about the points so much as it is how you get there. And in my opinion, they will have methodical drives. That's what they've been doing all year. It hasn't been a ton of explosiveness. It's been some of these plays where you go out and get 6 yards on first down, and you're able to convert, and then you make a play-action play, and then you have some of these receivers running towards the sideline on these out routes and these crossing routes. You know, I think that if Georgia gets in the mid-30s, if they're scoring 35 points, I think they feel pretty good about what their offense has done.
So the setup for that conversation was I told Mike that I had been hearing from some Georgia fans who were saying, hey, this is about, you know, you got to shut down Oklahoma's offense. You got to show them what SEC defense is all about. That's the way you win this game. Other Georgia fans saying, you know, Oklahoma's going to get its points. Georgia's got to find a way to get to a certain number. If it can get to that number, it's probably going to win this game. And for the most part, Mike's answer, I completely agree with. I think there's only so much shutting down of the Oklahoma offense you're going to be able to do. As good as the Georgia defense is, and I think it's an elite group, we're still talking about a spread offense by Oklahoma that's sort of designed to kind of compile yards, compile points. To a certain extent, Oklahoma does have a threshold that it's likely to meet. And therefore, I do think the pressure then for the game is kind of put on the Georgia offense to somehow match that, exceed that, and that's how Georgia ultimately gets the win. Is Oklahoma going to move the football the way that it has against Big 12 defenses? Obviously not. Is it going to move the football some? I think it is. And at that point in time, Georgia's got really a duty and an obligation to respond. And here's where things kind of get interesting when you start looking at the Georgia offense against the Oklahoma defense. Because I think there is one aspect of the Oklahoma defense that's incredibly misunderstood. And maybe it kind of clouds our perception of the entire Sooners defensive unit here. But the numbers are not what they seem at first blush. Let me try to explain here. And once again, I'm going to try to get too deep into the numbers here that this becomes boring. But hopefully there's a moral to this story that we can all kind of take away from this. When you look at the basic stats, and there's always this debate that goes on in college football of which stats matter more, the traditional old school stats or the sort of the new school metrics advanced stats. Well, this is one area in which I believe the new school advanced metrics, advanced stats, the analytics, if you will, I think they tell a more compelling story about the Oklahoma defense than maybe overall of what you get from the traditional numbers. Look at the traditional numbers for the Oklahoma defense. Here's what you've got. Oklahoma is 40th against the run defensively, giving up 144.15 yards per game. Against the pass, Oklahoma just 87th in the country, giving up 240.6 yards per game. So if you just take those numbers alone, what you come away thinking is Oklahoma is good against the run but really bad against the pass, giving up much less on the ground they're giving up through the air. However, the advanced metrics tell us something a little bit different about the Sooners, which gives us an idea of how Georgia needs to attack Oklahoma in this game on January the 1st. If you look at efficiency, which is different than just sort of counting the number of yards, efficiency is about success rate. How successful are the opposing offense's plays? Oklahoma's actually much better against the pass than you may realize. 87th in the traditional numbers, but 52nd against the pass when you factor in defensive efficiency. Against the run, they're actually a little worse. They are just 62nd against the run when you come to defensive efficiency. So what is the difference here? Why do advanced stats say something so different than the traditional overall stats do? Because it goes back to the league that Oklahoma plays in. Oklahoma's a Big 12 team. They play in a league where not that many teams are very good at running the football. So when Oklahoma's 40th against the run, giving up just 144.15 yards per game, you have to realize, oh, the teams that they play, for the most part, don't try to run the football very much. Oklahoma appears bad at the pass because the teams that they play in the Big 12 are, for the most part, pass-happy teams. But when you factor in efficiency, how they do on a down-per-down, play-per-play basis, well, at that point in time, it's a little bit more balanced. Oklahoma against the pass, against the run, virtually the same. The overall success rate, which is defined by how much of the yards do you get that you need? Do you get 40% on first down? Do you get 50% of the needed yards on second down? Do you get all of the needed yards on third and fourth down? Against the pass, the pass defense, success rate 39.3%. That's actually just below the national average. Same for against the rush, which is 41.6% in terms of an overall success rate, just below the national average. So that's a lot of stats. It's a lot to digest. And the question you may be asking is, what then does it all mean? I think that Mike Johnson is right. I think that the way that Georgia wins the game against Oklahoma is largely going to be determined by how many points the Dogs score, more so than how many does it give up to the Sooners. But the overall point here that I think a Georgia fan is supposed to take away from this discussion is gaining yards and scoring points against the Sooners may not be as easy to do as it first appears. the traditional old school numbers suggest an Oklahoma defense that's frankly not really all that good. The advanced metrics, the true analytics that look at efficiency and success rate and things like that show you a defense that, while not elite, is probably at least average. An average defense coupled with a really good offense is a really tough challenge for Georgia. So pressure on the UGA offense in that game, almost for sure. Is it a challenge that Georgia's going to be ready for? My guess is it probably will. It's good to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily. We'll get into UGA recruiting later on, including the decommitment from Javon Becton. We'll do that later on. But for now, let's dive deep for a little more of Rose Bowl coverage and talk. Let's bring on Seth Emerson. It's good to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily as well.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
And as we said, we'll talk to Seth Emerson a lot about what's going to be happening in Pasadena coming up to start the month of January with Georgia and Oklahoma. But before that, Seth, we do have to deal with the negative story from a Georgia perspective when it comes to the arrest of Latavius Breeny. And I won't pretend to understand a lot of, you know, what's going to go on here in terms of first-degree felony, the forgery charge related to the allegation that he used a counterfeit $100 bill. But at first glance, at first blush, just simply stated, this is a very serious legal issue for Breeny moving forward here. He's got problems much greater than will he ever play football again at this point. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, forgery is a new one for me. I haven't covered one of these before, so I don't know if this is something that, if it's just the facts that we know, is something that they could, you know, a good lawyer could get in there and knock it down to a misdemeanor and get probation or whatever. This is, you know, assuming that he's guilty, which we, you know, you still have the presumption of innocence there. So we have to point that out in terms of his legal situation. In terms of his situation as a Georgia football player, you know, due process is something that often doesn't happen. You don't have enough time to get due process. So it'll be interesting to see the next chance that we get to ask Kirby about it, how they're treating this. I mean, we don't know. Did this come out of the blue to Georgia? Did they know about it? Was the first they found out about it on, I guess, what was it? What's today? Thursday. I guess Wednesday morning when all this broke, Tuesday night. We don't know. So a lot of unanswered questions here.
Yeah, you mentioned the idea of the due process. It does seem like from time to time in the past, Georgia players have sort of, you know, willfully volunteered to give their due process up for whatever reason, agreeing to search when maybe they had a legal right not to. Once again, I'm not a lawyer. I may be wrong about some of this. But in Breeny's case, really paying attention to what his legal rights are, this would seem to be a pretty important thing for him, given the fact that what he's dealing with is a potential felony here. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, and I don't even know so much. It depends, I guess, on which situations you're talking about in the past. I mean, Isaiah Crowell, for instance, in 2012, ended up having that gun charge dismissed. I won't even, like, say on a technicality. I don't remember the exact details of it. But, you know, he was arrested. He was booted off the team pretty quickly by Mark Richt. And then it ended up getting dismissed. And then I think someone came back and asked Mark Richt about that and said, you know, do you regret doing that? And he said, well, no. And that's pretty common here. I mean, if you remember the Jonathan Taylor situation, he got booted by Georgia right away on the domestic violence one. He ends up at Alabama and gets booted after he has the domestic violence there in Tuscaloosa. And Nick Saban got up there, I remember one time after that, and saying, well, you know, that charge ended up getting dismissed. Jonathan didn't get his due process. But, you know, that also forgets that the woman came back and said and kind of recanted her recantation. So it gets all messy. But basically what happens here is, and partly because of public pressure, but partly just because of a timeliness factor. And it happens in the NFL, happens basically in every sport now, where there's a matter of you have to balance due process and other factors, including public pressure, but also just your own. You know, you've got to move on as a team, and you don't know whether, I mean, is Georgia going to reserve a scholarship for Latavius Breeny pending this legal situation? You know, it's a tough kind of deal. I mean, yeah, you're innocent until proven guilty as far as the judicial system and everything, but you don't have a legal right to be a football player at Georgia.
So that's something that gets balanced out in these cases a lot.
And I actually want to talk to you about that subject some more in just a minute, about how things like this do impact something you've also written about this week, which is Georgia's constant pursuit of staying at the 85 scholarship threshold. Before that, when you initially wrote about the details of Breeny's arrest, you suggested it was unknown as to why it took so long for this to come out. I guess the incident happened in July. We're finding out about it here in December. Any new details as to why there is the lag time? And maybe this is just the way that all legal proceedings go. I'm not, too aware of that. But any new knowledge as to why it took so long for this to become public?
No, not yet. I did send a follow-up to the public information officer yesterday, basically asking about the lag time and saying, is it due to, if you read the incident report, what they say is the counterfeit bill was realized. They realized it was a counterfeit bill at the bank drop, which happened, quote, sometime later. Well, was that sometime later like 2 weeks? Was it later that day? Was it, last week? So that explains the lag time. It's not sure. Were they just conducting a long-term investigation before they decided to make the arrest here? So I do not have the answer to those questions, but I would like them.
And then I guess the last thing for me on this particular arrest story, and obviously this is sort of an unpleasant scenario if you're a Georgia fan to think about, but we just saw a situation at Florida where several guys kind of got wrapped up in the same legal scenario there. If it is indeed a fake $100 bill that Breeny used, the big question that he's going to be asked by prosecutors is, where did you get that bill? Now, obviously, if you're a Georgia fan, you sort of hold your breath here in the hopes that the only person that put his fingerprints on a fake bill may have been Latavius Breeny, and that nobody else kind of gets snared in this situation either, right?
Right, and I don't have any information that it extends beyond him. I don't have any information that it doesn't. Right now, there's no information other than it's just him.
So you touched on something a moment ago, and if you don't mind me asking you a very kind of blunt question here. Because Georgia is, at an era now where it's really going to use all of its 85 scholarships to the best that it possibly can and aggressively recruiting, some people tell me that they believe, and this is just fan opinion, this is not like inside sources, but fan opinion, to say that Georgia's going to start handling some discipline situations more harshly because it needs that scholarship. Just to be for instance here, Jason Stanley, who had the one incident in December, a guy like that who's contributing on special teams but not catching the ball as a wide receiver, a chance that Georgia deals with something like that more harshly now than it would have in the past. Maybe the same thing for Breeny here as well. We don't know if he's guilty or not, but as you sort of alluded to a moment ago, maybe Georgia from a scholarship standpoint just has to move on. Is there a chance that Georgia is going to deal more harshly with discipline because it's got competition for roster spots right now?
Well, they didn't have competition for roster spots because of all the attrition in the latter, I guess, that kind of 2012, 13, 14, 15 era under Mark Richt, and they were booting people pretty regularly. So the two were not connected at that point, and it was actually part of the reason they had so much roster room was because they were booting people. Because if you go all the way back to, and I discussed this with Chip Towers this morning, we're kind of throwing ideas back and forth, and he's writing about the discipline situation later today. But if you go back to 2010, they had, I think it was 11 arrests between March and October of that year. And it was after the Caleb King arrest where either Mark Richt on his own or he was told from above, just said, all right, that's, we're kind of getting close to zero tolerance here. And so when guys got arrested, they tended to get, harsher discipline. And if you remember the whole Nick Marshall, Sanford C, and Chris Sanders situation, those three were off the team when there was just the one incident and it wasn't an arrest. So that was, you had an accumulation of those. And that was why Georgia was sitting at like 70 scholarships some years. This year, I don't know. I don't think that they'll necessarily be connected. I think it's a little easier. I mean, I don't know. I was about to say it's a little easier to let a Latavius Breeny go because he's a three-star who, was redshirting this year. But, maybe he turns out to be the next Dominic Sanders. I don't know. So it's a little unfair to him. The Natrez Patrick situation, I mean, clearly that's a guy that you know, he's a starter. They're kind of holding on to him. We don't know what his situation is. So until I see how they handle both of those situations, then it's really hard for me to say.
Speaking of trying to get down to 85 scholarships or maintain 85 scholarships, it looks like for next year one of those is going to be used by a senior defensive tackle, Trent Thompson. Are you taking what Thompson put out on social media as an announcement that he is returning? Do you feel like you still have to do some following up on that to be sure? Or is Thompson's message on Twitter the other day the official announcement that he is returning?
It's not official in my mind until we talk to him or there's a press release from the team saying that he's coming back. It was an indicator. I think that's definitely fair to say.
When it comes to a Jacob Eason, is it your best guess that, like, very quickly when Georgia season ends, whenever it does end, either after the first or after the national championship game, that some kind of announcement one way or another will come quickly from him? Is this one of those things where if he's transferring, he's going to say it right away?
Yeah, probably. I would imagine that it would be – that process might have been delayed by Georgia making the playoff, frankly. But I also think that everyone – look, from all appearances, Jacob has handled this whole situation well. So I'm sure Kirby's going to work with him. You know, as in if Jacob wants to have, quote-unquote, his people, as in his dad and, you know, other people, you know, contact other schools, kind of back channel, Kirby will probably say that's fine. That's just my speculation. I don't think anyone – I mean, I'm sure Kirby and Jim Chaney would rather he stayed just for a depth standpoint. They, you know, when he leaves, they're actually at one until Justin Fields gets on campus and, you know, until Justin Fields – gets on campus or signed to the dotted line, there will always be that paranoia of, well, you know, what if Florida State gets in there or something like that? So, yeah, I mean, I still expect that. I mean, we kind of all know the direction this is going. I was in the locker room afterwards. And, you know, he was asked, and he kind of said, yeah, I'm taking it day by day. And it was just kind of one of these implicit kind of, all right, we all know what's happening here. But, you know, look, Jacob Eason's one injury away. No one wants to think this, but Jacob Eason is one injury away from being Georgia's quarterback in a national championship game or in the Rose Bowl to have the right to play for the national championship. And it could be one terrible injury. Again, I hate to almost say it, but it could be one terrible injury away from him being, you know, back to number one in 2018. So until all facts are, you know, known as well possible, nothing official is going to be announced here.
If it does play out the way a lot of us, I think, assume it's going to play out and he does transfer, is Kirby Smart under any pressure from a recruiting standpoint to be less restrictive with Eason where he might want to go, given the fact that the country is going to be paying attention to this coach who signed three straight five-star quarterbacks and maybe there's the perception he doesn't want to hold one of these guys hostage? Is Eason going to have more freedom in his transfer than other players might have in terms of where they might want to go play?
You're asking me a lot of questions that I plan on asking Kirby when I get a chance.
Sure.
I mean, we obviously know what his stance was at first. Let's say, and I got no information to indicate this, but let's say Jacob Eason wants to go to Miami. Now it's been 2 years. Is that enough time for Kirby Smart to say, okay, anybody who wants to go to Miami can go to Miami. We're just going to restrict to the SEC. I don't think he's going to open the doors for any players to transfer within the SEC unless they are a graduate transfer, because he's on record, Kirby is, going back to the Murray Smith situation, that if you graduate from your school, you should be able to go wherever you want. Otherwise, I think he's going to probably restrict it to the SEC and Georgia Tech, may look at teams that are on their schedule, may restrict them to Notre Dame, because don't forget, they come here in 2019.
Okay.
The Miami question is an interesting one.
Yeah, no doubt. Back to the bowl game here for a moment. I've been wondering along the last few weeks, would we get any bulletin board material either from a Georgia player saying something about Oklahoma, Baker Mayfield, outspoken guy, saying something back towards Georgia? I didn't imagine that the bulletin board material would come from Ed Oliver, the very good defensive lineman from Houston. And you got some quotes from him that I thought were pretty provocative. His assessment of the Oklahoma lineman not really being, at least in some cases, quite SEC caliber. You were there for that quote. Did you find that to be as interesting as I did? And do you think that's the kind of thing that Oklahoma players probably paid attention to?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they saw it. The one thing about that, and I should have pointed that out in my story, and one Oklahoma fan very nicely actually responded and pointed this out to me on Twitter, that after that game against Houston at the start of the 2016 season, Oklahoma changed a little bit of its line. So Ed Oliver may be kind of downgrading some guys that aren't really playing for Oklahoma anymore, or at least not their starting O-linemen. You know, by all reports, you know, it's a good line, and it's not just Orlando Brown. But, yeah, Ed Oliver was – I came away saying, well, I'd like to talk to him more. He's a good quote. And maybe we'll go back to that well. But, Baker Mayfield, my impression of him was, generally kind of positive. Like, he knew all the right things to say. He's done a lot of interviews, and he'll do more. And he, for all his – flamboyancy on the field, didn't issue any kind of, locker, bulletin board material and whatever. And what is interesting to see now is that Georgia's now the favorite slightly, but I mean, more people are betting on Georgia. You're seeing a lot of people betting on Georgia. I'm sensing a lot of confidence among Georgia fans, to be honest. It's a Big 12 offense. They're going to run into our defense, which is stout, and we're going to shut them down. And I wonder how much of that's going to get back to Oklahoma, and Oklahoma's going to have that chip on their shoulder when we get to game time. That'll be interesting to see, too.
Fascinating thought to conclude with. Seth, thanks for your time here today on Dog Nation Daily. We'll look forward to reading a bunch from you, and talk to you again on the show as soon as well.
Talk to you later.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Always fun having Seth Emerson here on Dog Nation Daily. And boy, yeah, I mean, that contrast in styles between Georgia and Oklahoma continues to be the thing that I think makes the game interesting, even for people kind of outside the Dog Nation, bubble. I don't know if there's a Sooner Nation, but to the extent that there is, if you root for just college football in general, I think you like the idea of seeing how this elite SEC-style defense handles that top-flight Big 12-style offense. That is a really, compelling subplot. And it's only natural that the Georgia guys think their brand of football is better. Conversely, it's probably only natural that the Big 12 guys think their brand of football is better. Can we go, however many more weeks it is, a little less than 3 weeks, can we go 3 weeks without somebody saying something that makes the other side mad? Ed Oliver, who is a terrific player, is the Outland Trophy winner. Ed Oliver kind of fired the shot that maybe you might have expected to come from Georgia, but Kirby Smart's player is probably too well-trained to do that. I'm going to get back to Georgia recruiting here in a moment on Dog Nation Daily. Before that, let me do the SEC through. I'll remind you that AT&T SEC Country Live comes up 3 p.m. Eastern time today on the SEC Country Facebook page. And for our SEC through today, I want to hit a lot of recruiting stories. I predicted this, and I turned out to be correct, that Adrian Martinez, the four-star quarterback that was committed to Tennessee, is committed to Tennessee no longer. He has flipped to Nebraska. What we said on yesterday's show was that the in-home visit that Jeremy Pruitt took with Martinez, the fact that Martinez never tweeted a picture of he and Pruitt together was probably not a good sign for the Vols. As it turns out, that's probably exactly what happened there. Martinez was sort of leaning the direction of Nebraska even before Pruitt was hired, and there was just nothing that Pruitt was going to be able to do to win him back that quickly, which is maybe not the world's biggest loss. I don't know that, Martinez is the next great quarterback in the SEC necessarily, but when you think about defensive-minded head coaches, and I said this, I think, yesterday on AT&T SEC Country Live, those guys need their quarterback. Muschamp never got his at Florida. He was fired because of it. Kirby Smart finds Jake Fromm here in 2017. He's essentially National Coach of the Year, at least according to some of the ballots. I mean, that's how important a quarterback is for the defensive-minded head coach. Offensive-minded head coach, he can create a quarterback out of thin air sometimes. The defensive-minded guys, they're just not going to be able to do that because, it's a lot easier for an offensive-minded head coach to find a good DC than it is for a defensive-minded head coach to go out and outsource an offense. And Jeremy Pruitt's going to be facing that challenge, and it's going to be a little bit tougher given the fact that he's probably not getting an elite quarterback here for the class of 2018. By the way, speaking of SEC teams and recruiting elite quarterbacks, it seems that Florida has decided to go all in on Matt Corral. In-home visit earlier this week, official visit for Corral to Gainesville this weekend. That's the final weekend before the early signing period begins on the 20th. But there's a lot of chatter out there that Corral is seriously considering Ole Miss. This entire scenario for me is just a little bit weird. I will admit I don't quite understand you know, Florida's now trying to act like that Corral's always been a priority, but it seems like they were awful slow in going after him. And maybe it's one of those deals where Mullen really did, you know, swing for the fences with Fields, and obviously that didn't work out. And so now he's scrambling to get Corral. But, you know, this is one of those situations where perception may indeed be reality here, that in terms of giving too much attention to the wrong quarterback, he may have harmed his chances with the Corral, who's going to go to Ole Miss potentially, even though Ole Miss is facing a bowl ban for 2018 and scholarship reductions that really reduce the chances that the Rebels will ever be good under Corral. Right now, that may be where he's looking to go. This could potentially be a real stumble by Florida here to miss out with Corral because it had a futile effort at going after Justin Fields, which a lot of folks have told you they were never getting him anyway. By the way, speaking of quarterbacks, a lot of that going on here when it comes to the SEC through here today. Emory Jones has been giving you aware, five-star quarterback from Heard County here in Georgia, a guy that Georgia kicked the tires on for a while, but has been an old Ohio State commit for a long time. Jones, though, has been thought to be decommitting from Ohio State. I think a lot of the online chatter for the last few weeks has had Jones ending up a part of Alabama's class in 2018. So much so that, I mean, you know, you've seen a lot of movement from you know, Ohio State offered another quarterback. They offered Jaren Williams from Central Gwinnett High School in Lawrenceville, Georgia. Alabama has been kind of making room here for Emory Jones. But now some of Jones' activity on Twitter has some folks thinking that maybe Alabama is not coming up with Jones here. Emory Jones had a tweet welcoming Cameron Bibb, a wide receiver, to Ohio State's 2018 class. That was sort of taken by some as to mean that maybe Jones is a little closer with the Buckeyes than some initially thought. Now, sometimes Twitter behavior can be a false positive here, but this has definitely got some Alabama fans nervous, and I guess there's a thought that Alabama may be looking at like a James Foster, who was originally committed to Missouri, another quarterback here, given the fact that it seems like there's at least some chance that they are going to lose out on Emory Jones, a player that they would really like to have had, because obviously they feel like they need another quarterback, even though they've still got the relatively young Jalen Hurts and the true freshman this year, Tua Tagovailoa, but they're still looking to add another elite player, but they may miss out on Emory Jones. One other quick final story, and we'll get more into this on AT&T SEC Country Live today. LSU potentially facing a bad situation. Its offensive line coach going to become offensive coordinator at BYU, and that's put some offensive line recruits for LSU in flux here. That's a story of real concern for Tigers fans. We'll talk more about that on AT&T SEC Country Live. For now, though, we'll make that your SEC through. Okay, let me go back to Georgia recruiting here for a moment, because the movement with UGA recruiting here over the last couple of days has involved, after Trey Hill's commitment, it's more involved guys who are either leaving the class or set to be leaving the class. Let me start with Javon Becton here. You saw Becton on Twitter kind of putting it out there that he's decommitting from Georgia. He's not going to be a part of this class. I think we have the Becton tweet we can show you if you're watching us on video, what Javon Becton had to say about that. But he's not going to be a part of this class. He was looking at the situation with all those elite outside linebackers that Georgia was probably bringing in, and he says, I want to thank everyone at Georgia for giving me an opportunity to play for them, but after thinking it over, I'm officially decommitting from the University of Georgia and reopening my recruitment. And he, of course, says the phrase that so many recruits say this time of year, respect my decision. So that's Javon Becton choosing to move on. Another guy who, while not officially out of the Georgia class yet, could be on his way soon is defensive back Aaron Brulé. Now, Brulé's had a couple things going on here as of late. I'm going to show you this on Twitter. He had an in-home visit with TCU the other day. Because of that, or shortly, I shouldn't say because of that, but shortly after that. Okay, we'll start with this. If you're watching this on video, you can see this. Brulé with a TCU assistant coach there in his living room. He says, great in-home visit with TCU, hashtag go Frogs. So that's what Brulé puts out there the other day, that picture with he entertaining in his home an assistant coach from TCU. And then he puts out this tweet yesterday, around this time yesterday, as I'm recording this during the 10 o'clock hour. He says, I'm going to be postponing my signing until February 7th. I've got some things I need to look into. So that's Brulé, another one of those three-star recruits on the Georgia board right now as a Georgia commit, not planning on signing here during December, going to postpone to the old-school February signing day because he's got some things he needs to look into. Obviously, if you follow Georgia recruiting closely, you think you have a pretty good idea of what's going on here. This is a scenario in which Becton and Brulé, two guys who may be really good players at the college level, but maybe not quite fitting in with the overall profile of what Georgia's recruiting right now, which is very high four-star and five-star guys. The amount of, you know, five-star guys alone. They're going to be at Georgia this weekend for official visits. Just to give you an idea that, Georgia's in a pretty rarefied air when it comes to recruiting right now, and, maybe there just wasn't going to be room for Becton Brulé, or maybe Becton and Brulé looked at the scenario there and said, you know what, that's a little too crowded for me. Maybe it's a little bit better for me to go to a school that's going to prioritize me and give me a chance early playing time. We know that playing time is the currency that matters to all these players. Maybe in both Becton and Brulé's case, that's exactly what they were looking for. And you know what? I wouldn't fault them for feeling that way. And frankly, and I mentioned this, I believe, during the comment portion of our show on video. On video every day, we stay a little longer and we kind of do some questions and comments back and forth. And one of the things I said, I think, during that portion of our broadcast yesterday was, I'm also not going to apologize on behalf of Georgia for it chasing down the 25, or I guess in 2018's case, the 24 best players it can sign. I mean, high school football, college football recruiting is a fast-moving business, and it is about maximizing your potential. You know, the championship chase in the SEC just requires that, because if you look at the schools that you are chasing down, primarily Alabama, who, well, by the way, Georgia may meet a national championship game here in a few weeks, Alabama's making sure that the 85 guys it has on scholarship at any one time are the best 85 players you could attract. And that means in each and every signing class, you've got to maximize your opportunity to bring in as many 4- and 5-star guys as you can. We said this to start the show. Georgia's biggest advantage over Oklahoma in the Rose Bowl is probably the fact that it signed more 4- and 5-star guys. There's a premium put on that in the SEC that does not exist in the Big 12. It's one of the reasons why you've seen SEC teams be a fixture in the college football playoff, and in the BCS era before that, winning those championships over and over and over again. Because recruiting matters. Elite players matter. And I wish Becton and Brulé, if he doesn't join the class, I wish them well. And I also appreciate the fact that Georgia's got a tough job here. It's got to keep pace with some really talented programs, and it's doing everything it can to do that. All right, as we get ready to wrap up here on the program today, let me just say this real quickly. I mentioned a moment ago about our comment section on Facebook Live. I love the comment interactions that we get a chance to have every day there for those of you that watch us on video. And one of our great commenters, Santiago D. Arne, he sent me a gift the other day. I wish I had a picture of this. I'd show it to you. I should have brought it in here. He sent me a ticket from Caesars Palace, a futures bet on Georgia win the national championship. It's a low-limit bet. It's not, you know for a large sum of money, but it's an incredibly nice gift. So if Georgia wins the national championship, thanks to our buddy Santiago in our comment section, I'm going to have a Georgia national championship ticket that I may frame as just a souvenir for a terrific season of the Dogs. So, Santiago, I appreciate that. By the way, I appreciate all of you as well, especially those of you who are Gator haters like me. Gator Hater Countdown, 317 days from right now, Georgia beats Florida again. Thanks for being with us here on Dog Nation Daily. Look forward to seeing you tomorrow.